If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
Hello and welcome to the Need to Know Music Show with me, Ronan McManus, here on Switchbox TV. And today I'm joined by an Irish singer who rose to fame on X Factor, and she's co-written with some fantastic artists. She's just released a new album this year. Please welcome Janet Devlin. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm very good. I'm very good, yes. How's this strange year been for you? It's been a bit of an odd... I mean, I don't think there's been such a weird year in terms of plans ruined and new things having to be planned and whatever else. So what's your year been like?
It's not the worst year of my life, thank God. It's just been a weird one, to be honest. Like, I realised that a lot of my life is done through isolation anyway. I'm not exactly a social butterfly. Downside has been trying to release an album in the middle of it, which was class. Loved that. Loved the challenges that gave me. And no touring or anything like that. Like, but honestly, as far as putting it in the grand scheme of things, like, I've been very lucky. Like, I'm very blessed in the sense of, like, I moved most of my job online a few years ago, so, like, not much really changed as far as that went. It was like, oh, so we're just living the same life instead of changing it. Okay.
It just seems like everyone else is now online as well. It just means there's more people.
That's it. I'm like, oh, hi guys, like, let's hang out, you know. More people go into the online shows and stuff as well, which has been class.
Is that something you've been doing for a while then, the online? You've been doing the online shows, stage it shows and that kind of thing. YouTube, I know YouTube, your YouTube channel is huge. Has that kind of been, have you been doing things through that?
The gigs have been going for 6 years now. And wow. I've had the channel since 2006. So I'm an internet veteran for somebody who's my own age. I'm like, we've been doing this a long time. We've been doing this too long. So it's not new for me to have to embrace technology and stuff like that. Like, me doing online gigs though was a means to an end at the start. Like, it was because I was trying to live off £25 a week and I couldn't afford to go on tour because I just reached bankruptcy at 18 after a fraudulent record deal. So you know, living my best life. But it worked out in my benefit. It means that, you know, I've built a lovely online community and can do gigs, you know, two shows in a month. It's great.
So yeah, so you've been doing stuff on YouTube since before your X Factor days, is that right?
Yeah, literally. Yeah. So I've always been posting on YouTube since I was like 11. I was editing and uploading. Obviously, I deleted all those because they were embarrassing. And then me and my friends had a YouTube channel, and then I started uploading covers and stuff onto my YouTube channel and things, in like 2010. So it's just been a thing that I've always done, you know, and never really questions.
It's funny because, yeah, it's something that, like, a lot of us have had to get to grips with. I mean, I've been sort of trying to release my album this year, and we've ended up just doing singles. And you know, the whole sort of online thing is and the sort of Zoom things and streaming with, like, technology and trying to use, you know, laptops and stuff. There's been a lot of people on a bit of a crash course, so maybe you could start charging musicians for lessons about to do it.
I know I've had quite a lot of DMs from people, especially on, like, the online gig front, you know, which I'm happy enough to help. You know what I mean? Like, I would, you know, I think the nice thing about being in the music industry is, like, you know, giving out your information for free, just being like, hey, here you go. But if I have a question about your strength, you better tell me for free, you know? So I scratch your back, you scratch mine, you know?
So do you do, like, paid ticketed events, or are they more like people can come in and just pay, like, tips or something?
So it's pay what you want, or you can just get in for free. Like, you can hitch a ride, somebody else can get you in. You know, so basically somebody can buy someone in for, like, one note, which is, like, I think it's like a dollar, like, or something like that. So you don't have to even pay. You can just turn up and someone will buy your ticket, essentially. I will be doing, like, more serious stuff, I suppose. Like, I think by the time the end of the year comes, like, I might try and do a gig, like a proper gig, you know, with the musos and stuff, and try and actually market that as a ticketed one. That's literally, I would only ticket the event like that just so I can pay my musician, you know. That's it. If it's just me on my own, I'm like, pay what you want, come in for free. And then as soon as my muses are there, like, please help me pay them.
So when I go back to your early life, because you're from Tyrone, is that right?
Yeah, so, Tyrone in Northern Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, so we're, because my family's from Stuartstown, just down the road, just around the corner from you. We've been out of Ireland for a long time, in a couple of generations in my case. But I was back there and I did a little gig in Tomney's in the Moy. Do you know Tomney's?
Yes.
Yeah. So those sort of bars and pubs around there, is that where you started doing gigs and stuff around that sort of mid-Ulster sort of area?
I didn't really, like, I did one gig. I remember doing an open mic night, and then, like, I must have done well because I got offered to come back and be paid as long as it was on the DL. You know, he's like, don't tell anybody else I'm paying you. That was pretty, like, near the house. That was in Strabane. And I did singing competitions because I was a drummer. The only way I got into singing, like, actually, like, fronting something was because, like, I was drumming for a while. My parents wouldn't buy me a drum kit. They were like, earn it yourself. So I was like, fine. People had told me I had a decent voice. So I started doing, like, these local singing competitions and just did about 8 or 9. Placed, like, never won, but I placed. And I just saved up all that money so I could be a drummer, because, like, I wanted to be a drummer in an all-girl, like, punk band. And that worked really well. I'm smashing it. fulfilling the dream.
So you were, was there a decent sort of amount of musicians around and a decent sort of scene around that time?
Yeah, like, I was in an emo band when I was, like, 14. I was in a few bands, like, but we never really left the rehearsal room, you know. It was always, like, I would be writing the songs and then, you know, somebody would turn up too stoned or somebody would be drunk and then we never actually got to turn up for the gig or something. It was always a mess. It was a mess. But, you know, it was good. It was good crack, I suppose. But there was definitely a big music scene. There was always a big music scene, you know, and people actually wanted to go and see music. You wouldn't get paid for it. You know, you had the likes of Artie McGlynn, who's, like, a famous guitar player who toured the world. And he's, like, a few pubs down and he's playing for pints. So who are you, you little 14-year-old in an emo band? Who do you think you are? Do you know what I mean? Like, so there is no money in it.
No, but you were getting experience. So that's what they always say.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what sort of age were you? Did you already know that you wanted to do music for a living? Or was there a moment, a gig, or what was the moment that you thought, this is something I want to pursue? Rather than, you know, properly and do it properly, put your mind to it. I always wanted to.
My mum used to joke though, she's like, good luck finding that in the job market. You know what I mean? Like, she was very straight down the line. Like, I got very good grades in school, so my parents were like, oh, I can't wait for her to be a psychologist. And I'm like, so I always just kept that in the front of my mind. I was like, well, I'm gonna go off and be a psychologist or whatever. But, like, music was always a passion. Like, I'd always done it my whole life. Like, it was, like, playing in Ceilidh bands and all that from, like, the age of 5. And I'd always just played it. But I never seen it as a career possibility. So quite honestly, like, I knew I was going to take a year out at some point. I think it was going to be after my A-levels that I was going to take a year and try and start taking it seriously. You know what I mean? But I kind of fast-forwarded that process a little bit by, like, my mum being like, oh, X Factor or Howling Auditions, and you can send a video in. And I was like, eh. And she's like, well, what's the worst you can say? They say no. Because I had no faith in myself. Like, I genuinely didn't think I was good at all. Like, I had no, I was so shy. I used to get really bad stage fright and all that kind of stuff. So, I never really seen it as a possibility. And I never thought that, like, somebody like myself could ever be, like, a front person, like, you know, because I always wanted to be in a band, so I never thought, like, I would be the person at the front ever. So it was just like, I never thought of it as a thing, but I always knew I wanted to take that year and do it when I was, like, 18 or 17 or 18 or whatever. But yeah, that didn't happen. I went a different route.
Tell us about that sort of applying for X Factor, getting accepted, going and doing it. What was all that like? Because you're talking about you're talking about being a shy sort of person with no real self-belief to kind of the person you are now is a million miles away. So there's obviously, at what point did you sort of think, you know, you feel like you had a confidence in yourself, or did you still have none when you got to X Factor? What was the kind of your journey? What was your journey?
I didn't get confidence till
journey. That journey was terrible. Great, I shouldn't have said that word. Can we just scratch that? We'll edit that out.
Eventually, we'll just bleep it out, like you said, a swear word.
Yeah. Basically, did.
Yeah. So I don't know. I didn't like. I'll be honest. Like, I didn't get confident at all in my life until literally about last year. and like, well, January to the, like, you know, I was an addict and all that kind of stuff. Like, so I clearly didn't believe in myself.
I was the same. I'm three years sober now.
Congrats, man. Yeah.
So it's amazing, isn't it? When you get off it and you realize you've actually got control over your emotions and you can actually have confidence and you can do stuff.
So, like, I, you know, I got sober and then I thought I got confident and then I relapsed. And then really, I actually went to rehab and like, because I'm an addict of all things. Like, I call myself a blanket addict. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, I'll get addicted. And when I went for that therapy and all that kind of stuff, I realized that, like, I thought I was confident until somebody was like, can you just say you're worth it? And I'm like, no, I can't. So since like January 2019, I've really been on this like uphill trajectory of like actually being confident and like, you know, being able to go on stage and just be like, I care in the right amount and I'm having a good time and I'm here for the right reasons. But like 16-year-old me, like I was doing TV, I was doing like performances at Wembley and then going to the bathroom and crying my eyes out and just like literally not feeling like I was enough, and I had no self-belief. And then I was dating a guy who was toxic and he would always be like, because this guy stuck around because like I thought he was the only person chatting sense, because he was like, yeah, you're not even that good, your voice isn't that special, I don't know what the hype is, like you're not good at all, you know. And I was like, thank you, sir. Thank you for keeping me on the right path. It was a pretty rough time, you know. But like, I loved the fact that going on that show, one, showed me that people believed in me, even though I didn't believe in myself, that a career in music is possible. It's not guaranteed, but it's possible. And that like when I've got a goal of music, I can keep myself pretty on the straight and narrow, at least enough to go, even when I was destroying myself, I would still get out of bed for music. It's like, oh, I need to go to the studio. I'm hungover. Who cares? Go to the studio. It was the only thing that like gave me purpose through my really dark times. So now it's nice, you know, as a sober person, as a confident person, it's nice to not be clouded by all of those demons, and I can actually just enjoy life for what it is and enjoy music in a healthy amount. Not if I don't do music, I have to kill myself. You're like, no, you don't. Yeah. You know, you can like something in a healthy amount.
And did you find like your range of your physical being able to sing, the level you could sing at, that kind of thing? Did you find that got better when you got sober, or were you always just as good
just always as you are now? Small voiced. It didn't matter when I quit cigarettes. I thought, oh, I'll get a good voice, and no, nothing. Not even like you couldn't even tell that my breathing had gotten any better. I was like, no, we really are an asthmatic, small voiced gal, and that's it, dude. And
I disagree. Okay. I disagree on your latest album. It's a lot. It just feels like it's a lot. Sort of everything's heavier and sort of a bit darker and a bit. You've got more range, I think.
Yeah, there's definitely more range.
But in terms of like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Dynamics. Yeah, I think just like, I wouldn't even say it's just more like getting older, and also like I wrote the songs. Like I wrote my songs for my first album. But I mean, I turned up hungover to every writing session and every recording session, and I was broken. But like, at least on this album, it was like, no, I know where my range is a bit better. Like, I know what sounds like I'm belting and all of that kind of stuff. But it's so funny. Like, me going full ham is hilarious because I'm like, and it's not even a high note, you know? I'm like, dude. we love a tryer, you know. It's just because I don't have a massive chest voice, you know. Like, I technically have quite a lot of range, but I don't have like a lot of chest, so it kind of cuts off pretty quick. Well, you know,
but I think you use it well with the, when you go into the soft bits and the kind of, and it's just it. I think you can convey everything you need to convey, just because you're not. Just because you're not Pavarotti it up, it doesn't mean you haven't got that. You've got enough of a hammer on when you need to. You know, you seem to give enough loudy.
There's a lot of falsetto going on that album. I'll tell you that for a hun. It was me being over ambitious in the writing process. I was like, oh, give me 6 months and I'll smash that note. And I'm like, no, still too high, dude. But nice try.
But yet there's a lot of religious imagery going on in this. I find, was this due to AA and sort of finding God through that again, or is it just literally Catholic upbringing, because Irish Catholic upbringing? Because I find I have a lot of references in my lyrics that realizing it, you realize how much it's the church and everything is part of you growing up, and it's sort of in your bones and nearly, you know. So all that religious stuff, is that kind of just naturally how you see things, and that's just the kind of the references that come to you naturally, or was it kind of a deliberate thing to have those messages in there?
So it was I always, when I was younger, used to write a lot of religious imagery songs, I suppose. Like, I was raised Catholic, you know. Love it. Love living a guilty life when I've done that thing. But no, I grew up really strict Catholic. And it was nothing really more than like I love the imagery that words, like one of my favorite words in the world is the word requiem. And it's a religious word. I think there's just so many nice words that now are part of like modern day vernacular, when we don't realize that they come from like Christianity or Catholicism and stuff like that. And I just think they're pretty, and I think they're evocative. And, you know, if I'm going to carry this Catholic guilt around with me for the rest of my life, I may as well profit off of it, you know?
But I think they sort of, a lot of those words carry a lot of weight with them. I think there's a real kind of, because of the sort of fire and brimstone stuff, there's a lot of weight in those words and in that imagery. And it maybe conveys a lot of emotion just by using those things.
Yeah, I think it's just weird when people get freaked out, like, oh, religious words. I'm like, shush.
I know. This is something because I was in a band, an Irish band, for years, and I realized that when non-Irish people and, you know, non-religious people heard the songs, they would be kind of scared of those words. But sort of because it's part of your upbringing, it's just another way of saying the same thing. Found that was a bit odd. Yeah, you've already sort of stumbled on the same thing I did.
It's like the reactions to people that like take it really seriously or whatever, and you're like, dude, it's a word. I don't know what to tell you. It's a pretty word.
So tell us about the co-writer. You've done a lot of co-writes in your all through your career, haven't you? So tell us about what you like about that so much, or do you have a certain set where you like to do it, or a certain set where you like to work? There's a lot of different people you work with. I'm wondering if you picked up different things, different people. What's that, like, those experiences been like?
When I started, it was just to learn a lot quicker, because I'd always written songs my whole life or whatever, but like I really wanted to. Because I wanted to use the fact that people would give me sessions that I didn't deserve because I did TV. Okay, like people would be like, oh, she's fresh off TV, you get into this, you know. And I was like, well, I'm going to use that to my advantage and go write with these people and like learn how they've crafted their skill and just like try and absorb through osmosis their knowledge. You know, I also, because like I was fresh and I was very nervous, and like I said, I had no self-confidence, and like going into a writing session, like for me, I still do like melody and top line, you know, like top line lyrics, whatever. But like realistically, the reason why I still do it to this day, because like I think there's like only one song in the album where I wrote wholly, and it's not because I don't write wholly on my own, it's just like Honest Man was written by me, and it's so dark, it's so miserable, so sometimes I'm like, my brain left on its own, dude. Dark. So if I ever went and did a full dark album, yeah, I could just do that myself. But for me, the biggest help with being in co-write is it helps me take it more seriously, in the sense of, because I use songwriting to like get my feelings out, I'm really guilty of like sitting down like with the uke or whatever and writing a verse and chorus and going, I feel emotionally fulfilled, goodbye, and like just leave it at a verse and a chorus and McDonald, like finish it, you know. So for me, because I've got a crappy attention span, like it's class, like I can go in and somebody is there to sit with me and almost like babysit me and not let me leave the room, and I really focus and I sit and I think and I get everything done, and that's what I like about it, because it feels more like a job then, because I don't want to waste anybody's time. Whereas yeah, if I'm left to my own devices, it's not a good idea, you know.
You see that you've done quite a lot of stuff with Newton Faulkner, they've seen Joshua Radin and Jack Savaretti, but Newton Faulkner comes up, you know, quite a lot. What was it like working with him? And because you did some gigs with him and stuff as well, didn't you? So what was that like?
Oh my God, yeah. That was so weird, dude. Like, I've been a massive fan of Newton my whole life. So whenever I got the chance to write with him, oh my God, I peed my pants. I was dying. I was like, you're joking me. He's okay with doing a session with someone like me. Are you serious? Like, does he know that like I did TV and stuff? Like, is he not like really off-putted by that? Because obviously I seen him as like really cool for school and a really credible artist. So like So whenever we worked together, it was great. He taught me like how to write happy songs, which is great. He showed me a different perspective on middle eights and stuff. Like, cause bear in mind when I was writing with him, I think I was 17. So I was still very
young to be, you know, you're announced to not have just discovered all your chops 17. By that point, you know.
Yeah, and I felt like because I did TV, like I definitely felt like people just expected me to be class overnight, you know, after never really having to master the art of songwriting, considering like I used to write songs but I never released them, or like would only play them for my friends or stuff like that, like but I took it seriously. I wanted to be better, I wanted to be a good songwriter, and you know, working with him was just like a class experience. And I did learn a lot, and from his brother as well, Toby, who's class. But basically, like, as well, like, when I did my launch gig, he came on and played with me, which was just crazy. Like, I got to say the words, like, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Newton Faulkner to the stage, which is mental. Like, for your first big London gig, I was like, man, I don't deserve this. And
he's an like, amazing musician as well, like, isn't he? He's an amazing player, isn't he? I mean,
he's got perfect pitch. He's like a beast when it comes to just like his harmony and theory. Like, that's where it felt like for me, like just being in a room with a true professional and a naturally gifted person as well, but also somebody who's very dedicated to their art. So that was just probably one of the best experiences that I could have had coming straight off television. To work with somebody like that, who was just a ray of sunshine though as well, you know, he wasn't intimidating, he was just very sweet about the whole thing, so I really appreciated that, and it taught me so much. And yeah, I've done lots of co-writing, and for me it's just great, you know, because like I still feel like I couldn't write a song to save my life sometimes. And I get to go into a room of people who I do believe in and write something that I normally love. So also it's free therapy, dude. I got to sit there and be like, so guess what happened? And we talk through my life and then we write a song about it, you know? So I'm like, you're not getting paid until the song's cut, you know?
So Just back briefly back to the TV, the X Factor thing. I mean, what did you feel like you learned the most from that experience? I mean, I know you were very young and it was obviously in a deep end, a big spotlight. How did you feel you handled it? Or what do you feel like there's something you still draw on now that you learned in that experience?
Because I was really self-destructive before I went on TV. Like, I was already, like, a self-harmer. I'd already suffered with anorexia and stuff like that. But, like, TV showed me that I could stay focused and not self-destruct if I had a goal. Like, especially if it's a music goal. Like, if I'm working towards something, at least on that show, you, like, work week by week. You know, each week you've got, like, a little goal to work towards. And I noticed, like, pretty quick, I was like, oh, we haven't thought about starving ourselves, or we haven't thought about slitting our wrists. Sorry to be so morbid. But it was true. It was like, oh, this is really working. Like, you know, and then when the show, like, inevitably did, you know, feel lost because I was a 16-year-old with mental health issues on television. I, you know, was fine and asking for help, and I got help. And yeah, so when I left, it was the perfect time, and I was like so ready to go. I was like, I'm on the tour. I get to make money. I'm fine. I'll go home now. Thank you.
But so, like, I mean, mental health thing is such a huge subject that's been tackled over the last few years. I mean, I mean, is it something that you've continued to sort of be involved in, or I mean, do you find your experience you're able to pass on and help people? Is that something that you have done, or do you find yourself, or how, what's your feeling on all that stuff?
So I wrote a book about everything I went through, because I went through a lot of stuff. But like, what did I? It's really hard.
Is that the book Confessional? It's out.
Yeah, so it's you know, like I said, I was a self-harmer by 12. I was an anorexic by 15. I had my first sexual assault at age 15. I became an alcoholic I had to get sober at 20. In the meantime, with relapsing with my eating disorder and relapsing with my self-harm as well, and you know, my drug addiction, as far as benzos, I was addicted to benzodiazepines, my rehab stint, and my fraud, all of these things that had happened that had really shaped me as a person, and I hadn't really opened up about, because I wanted to wait until I was really ready to just, like, throw it out into the universe. And writing the book allowed me to obviously put it in my own narrative and have full control over something. And then that felt really good. Obviously, it was really hard to write all that stuff down, but it felt good to get it out there. And then the YouTube channel, because I don't believe in paywall for that kind of stuff, like I sat down and I filmed, I think, 3 really long videos, one about rehab, one about my suicidal ideations and my suicide attempts, and I did one about my alcoholism, and I did one about my anorexia, these long form videos, just realistically, like, just sharing my story, not so much in the hope to help other people. Like, for me, it was like, if it helps someone else, that's a really good consequence. But for me, I know that it's just me sharing my story. And it was like, I knew that the media were probably going to pick up on the whole, like, especially the alcoholism, they were going to love to rinse that one. So I figured that, like, I didn't expect the journalist to go and read my book or buy my book or anything like that. So I was like, well, I have full control of my own narrative if I just sit down and tell people my story from my heart, like, uncut, start to finish, like 50 minutes long. And I just say how it started, where it took me, and where I am now. And it was the best decision I made doing it that way, because it meant that people could understand then and not have to pay for it. And also, it's reached a lot of young people as well. I've had so many, every single day I get people reaching out saying how much one of the videos has helped them or something like that. And it's great, because I feel like, as an addict or whatever, like, the worst thing for this disease or illness or whatever you want to call it, the worst thing for that is isolation and loneliness. It feeds that illness so much, and we can get so caught up in being like, I'm the only one. And, like, it's just not good for us. Whereas when we see other people going through the same thing and we hear other people's stories, we're like, ah, yes, I relate. I'm not alone. So it works both ways. Like when people send me their messages, I'm like, whew, I'm not the only one. And for them, it's been a case of like, oh God, I'm not the only one. And it's been amazing to think that even if a quarter of the people who've messaged me did actually get their buck tim eaten, that's insane.
And did you find that actually helped you to kind of put that down? It's almost like you can sort of close that chapter of your life a bit. You move on. It's officially done.
Yeah, I get it a lot from people where they're like, why are you writing a book at 25? And I'm like, fair point, sir. However, I don't want to ever write a book like this in my life ever again. Like, I don't want to have to sit and gruel over these pages of pain and hurt that I've put myself through and hurt that other people have put me through. Like, I just want to leave all of my demons in the past and just move forward. Because it's not like a stereotypical autobiography. It really is like a dark...
It's on a subject. It's on a subject at the top part time of your life. And so in the future, when you write your memoirs, you can sort of say, for all that shit stuff, refer to this book. This next one is the happy times.
I just wanted to move forward from it. And I know, I remember people saying like, oh, when you write it, like you'll feel so free. And every time I wrote a chapter, I was like, oh, I still don't feel very free, do you? And then I finished the book. And then it was like a file on my computer. This was the weirdest time in my life. I had my book as a file on my desktop. And I was like, sup, bro? Like all of my demons are in this little like pixel. And I didn't feel very free. And then the minute somebody texted me and they said, OMG, just read your book, the first person who'd done it, I was like, ah, freedom!
Brilliant.
It was so nice then. I was like, I can not be owned by this now. Thank God.
So let's move on to the new album, because this is now, I wanted to make sure I got all the demons and shit done before we can talk about now this is the future. And as I said before, I think that you can hear that there's a lot more aggression is not the right word, it's kind of, there's a lot more sort of there's a lot more rhythmical sort of deliberate arrangements, and it's a lot, there's a lot of Irish trad in there as well, which I was delighted to hear. There's a lot of those things, and it's like my upbringing. It's like it's the sound of my upbringing, basically. It's I can definitely relate to it all, and it's fantastic. Was that something that you really wanted to dig in? There's a lot of sort of some darker sounds and arrangements and themes. Tell us a little bit about the process of recording and writing and recording the album, especially the recording side of it.
So like I've kind of touched on the writing process. You know, I'd work with people that I admired, and I would do the lyrics and melody, and we'd sit in a room and I'd tell them my secrets, and then we'd write a song. And then I was writing the book alongside it. So, you know, I was seeing these clear holes of like, I want to write a chapter on this, so I need to write a song, but that kind of vibes. So I did two places of recording. So I recorded in Rack Studios in London. I worked with Jonathan Cornby, who is an absolute sweetheart. I love him to pieces. He'll murder me for saying he's a sweetheart. He'll be like, oh, I'm manly. But anyway, he's such a busy man. I flew him to Ireland because I was like, I'm going to get your undivided attention for a whole week. You're going to hate me. So basically, I rented an Airbnb down in Dublin City. I got all of these amazing class, like Irish traditional players, got them in a room and just got them to work out the parts and just play them. So I spent a whole week just recording all these trad artists, and it was class. It was so fun. So nice to be in Dublin too. Like, I love Dublin. It's like one of my favorite cities in the world, and it just felt lovely. So we had the Irish contemporaries there doing their bit, and then we flew it all back to London where I live and where Jonathan's studio is in Rack. So then we did all the English players over in London. So it's a mix of the two worlds.
It's a real mix. Yeah. We can hear the arrangements. There's some real, like, some really hard hitting sort of rhythmical drum parts and things like that. And whose kind of ideas was all those sort of parts? Was it kind of something that came up together, or was it kind of, did you have these ideas? Could you hear it in your head?
It was me wanting to bring in my drumming. you know, it was me trying to get the most of the fact that I drummed for years, because the whole thing was just trying to encapsulate my life in a record. And me playing in Killie bands at the age of 5 had to be included, so that's why there's Irish music in there. The heavy drum influences was the fact that I'd been a drummer in my life, you know. All of that kind of stuff is all in there. Even the nitty grittier parts, say like So Cold, that rock breakdown, is because I was really, really into alternative music when I was a teen. And all these things, they're like, they're never accidents. It's very, the whole thing is so on purpose, it's annoying, you know. Like, every detail was thought out. But that's what happens when you spend 5 to 6 years recording an album, you know what I mean? There are no happy accidents anymore at that point. It's all very to the point.
Yeah. Well, I liked the Danny Boy reference as well in Speak.
Oh, thank
that
you.
Was,
so
that
much.
Was good. Yeah. So what was the thinking behind that? Was did you add that Danny Boy bit before, or did it come from Danny Boy?
It's a hard one to explain. I'll just basically say it. The guy that sexually assaulted me, his name was Danny. And you know, I just took that reference of, oh, Danny Boy, and just chucked it into a song. So it pulled from my influences at home. It was something that happened to me when I was at home. So it just made sense to my brain as a twisted humor.
I like that kind of juxtaposition of kind of like a kind of a, it's a kind of a mournful kind of sweet song, and you know, to bring it into something really so dark is I like that. I like what you did there. It's good. It's a heavy subject, but you brought it in a different way. So
yeah, don't worry.
But it's good. No, I'm not worried. I'm just saying it was really. It's a good way to kind of take. Well, okay, you've taken this sort of sweet, mournful song and brought it in with that like that. And I also wanted to say Holy Water. I mean, is that basically?
Oh, thank you.
Is that going to be the finish of every gig you do? Because it feels like it's one of the, it could just go on forever. You could really. It's like a gospely sort of sound to it, and you know it's really joyful.
Yeah, that was so funny, that song. I wrote it at home in my I was living in a warehouse at the time, and it was because like I'd written another song called Holy Water, and it was supposed to be that song in the record. Turned up to the studio, we are literally a week away from me going to Ireland to record the album, and everybody turns around and goes, Holy Water's not that good. And I was like, they're like, oh, we'll get you in some writing sessions when you come back. I was like, I could fucking murder you. So I basically went home, took the day off the next day, wrote the song in like 2 hours, took it into the studio the next day and was like, hey, what do you think of this? And we stuck with the whole song. But then Jonathan like helped me rejig everything. He's like, move that verse here, change this line and that line or whatever. So it was written out of sheer annoyance. we love it. And sheer defiance. I was like, I can't believe you. He's like, we're a week away from going to record this bloody album. You tell me you don't like one of the songs. What is that? It's hilarious. Like, so it's a funny one to end up there. But I love the song. It's just supposed to be a happy clappy like little anthem of like, I don't know, as much as you can celebrate being sober as you can without it being so we're just being a bit silly, really. And like that mix of like Irish and gospel choir-y, just for funsies.
Yeah. Well, I can see that being a really sort of really great one live. That was going to be a great one to play live, because you can just see it just going off on one and being like 15 minutes long. So what's the plans for getting out there live? I know we don't know yet, but if all goes well, all being well, what are the plans for touring this stuff?
So basically, in the diary at the minute, I won't say when, but like next year, we have a UK and Ireland tour booked, a Europe tour booked, and some gigs out in the States. We don't want to look at even a tour in America just yet, because they seem to be a wee bit further behind than all the Corona stuff. So but there will be all of that kind of stuff is in the works. Like I'm sat here, I know the dates, I know all that kind of stuff, but like it will be a thing. So people just, if they want to go see it, then it'll, when the world opens up, basically.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. That is the only way to look at it now, isn't it? Just sort of just plan short term and see what we can do. But it's good to know that that you're going to get out there though and get this stuff played live. But is that what's next for you? Or have you got some more of the live streams coming up and more of that stuff on your YouTube channel?
Yeah, there's always two live shows every month on stata.com. And then I'm going to try and write another album basically before the next tour, just for the crack. I just want to write a dark Western album or like a country Western album. We'll see how that goes. Not take it too seriously, not take 5 years to pick and make an album and just like bish bash bosh, write a fun record and just whack it out there, take it on the road as well, along with the last album. And that's the dream. We'll see how far I get.
Excellent. And we always ask for a recommendation on the show. So is there somebody you would recommend people go check out? And I'd also like to, if you can add on the end of it, sort of influences that you've had, people can check out influences. So first of all, someone now you think people should know about, and then also then move on to some major influences on you that you feel people could really also know, learn from.
Who would I say? The guy I'm thinking of, his name's availed me. He's a wee cub from Northern Ireland too. He's got a very good... He's gone. His name's gone. Who would I recommend checking out? Plested, I would say. Plested has got me through many a breakup. And he's an acoustic singer-songwriter. Does a bit of pop. He's a very sick songwriter. And influences for me... I think I'm thinking more like the next record, things that are like influencing that. It's probably the likes of like Joy Williams, Chris Stapleton, that kind of stuff. Like proper good country music is kind of been on my playlist now for 5 years, but those two artists in particular. So Joy and Chris Stapleton.
So the sort of Civil War stuff is fantastic, isn't it? I mean, the...
Absolutely, yeah. But I still prefer her solo stuff, to be honest. Like, I think
it's a brilliant album. Yeah, it's a great album. Is it The Front Porch? It's called
Front Porch. I swear by it. It makes me so happy.
Chris Stapleton, I just get too jealous to listen to him now. It's just, dude, I can't do it. His voice is insane.
In Austin. I was supposed to go see him this year, play in Austin, Texas. And I was literally so looking forward to it. It was like my absolute dream. Like, you've no idea how much of a dream that was. Like, I was like, oh, this is a thing that's happening. And the world was like, no. It's not
so fast.
Yeah, literally. Have a good time back in your room.
His voice is just insane, isn't it? Just crazy. I mean, that's just unreal. But there you go. We just torture ourselves listening to people we wish we could be.
It's like, God, I'll never be that good.
Okay. You can try. Not with that attitude, you won't. All right. So thank you so much for joining us, Jan. It's been absolutely a pleasure talking to you. So where's the best place for people to keep in touch with what you're doing?
Oh, Jesus, if there's a social media, I'm on it. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok, I'm on Facebook, I'm on everything. I've got my own website, which is probably the best one to go to, which is janetdavin.com, because I'm very inventive. All of my socials are on there.
Fantastic. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. And thank you for joining us. And let's hope you can... I'm great straight that you've got to start in this now. You've got that old chapter's gone now. You're starting the new...
Yeah, forward.
The next book has started, so you're starting to live that life first and then write about it.
Literally. All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Cheers, Janet. Cheers, Dad. Take care.
Bye.